nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here with you guys today. I've had a chance to speak at one of these meetings before. Professor Rao wasn't there at that time. And thank you, Tim, for arranging this and organizing this. And I do actually have a student here, Maria Jose. I'm going to be talking about some of her work. So she's also here. Okay. So at the outset, you might wonder, how a mechanical engineer comes to be in scanning probe microscopy. My background during my PhD has nothing to do with nanotechnology. I stayed away from it, in fact. I thought it was too catchy a thing. I stayed away from it. My background is in dynamical systems and more of an applied math background, nonlinear dynamics, chaos, bifurcations, and so on. But when I did my postdoc in Germany, I got exposed to the fact that, these oscillating scanning probes have some very interesting dynamics. And so when I came here, Ron kind of opened the doors, and he said, well, why don't you come and see how, if we can understand surface physics by understanding how these cantilevers vibrate when surface forces are active between the tip and the sample. We started a program. He opened the doors. And so he's a co-conspirator in everything I'm going to present here today. All right. So it started with that. And I don't particularly work in energy applications myself. So I made it a review in that I thought, why don't I present the capabilities that we could use with all the facilities that we have here, hoping that in the audience there might be potential collaborators who might want to take us up on the capabilities we have and then perhaps start some joint studies. So the current projects in the group are roughly these. We, on the top right, you see a broad category of cantilever dynamics. Like I told you, scanning probe microscopy is less of a microscope. It is more of a surface force measuring tool. And because the forces depend on so many physical properties, if you understand what those forces are through understanding how the cantilever oscillates, you're able to get a very interesting insight into the surface physics of the problem. And so that's been a focus effort for a very long time in the group. Over the last 2-3 years, been developing a lot of capabilities and studying nanobiomechanics using the scanning probe microscopy for live cells, live bacteria, and virus, single particle virus research. There is a big center at Purdue which deals with the reliability of switches, MEMS switches, RF MEMS switches. And my role there is to do a lot of experiments with these MEMS switches and the using the scanning probe microscope to understand properties of MEMS devices as well, which is an interesting area of research. There's three projects in the group that deal with nanocomposites. Typically, we propose them to be CNT as well as graphene nanocomposites. So far, the work has just been CNT-based nanocomposites. But that's where some potential overlap exists with energy-based applications. Another interesting area of research we work on is cellulose nanocrystals. This is funded out of the Forest Products Lab, which again is leading to some interesting possibilities when it comes to using nanotechnology for biofuels research as well. So I'll touch upon that. And then there are some other interesting areas which I won't get to talk about today. But again, I look at all these problems from my background, which is more applied mathematics, less applied physics. I depend on Ron for the applied physics part. And it's from dynamical systems and nonlinear mechanics. The research facilities that we have, at least, we have, at our disposal a very nice laser Doppler, scanning laser Doppler vibrometry system, which allows us to scan the eigenmodes of any micro-nano resonator. So we can do nanowires, even multi-walled carbon nanotubes. We can actually measure optically their vibration spectra up to 20 megahertz, for example. And we use it, actually, we have a system by which we can put an AFM underneath this, and we can actually observe the shape of the oscillating cantilever as it's making measurements. Very unique facility that's not replicated elsewhere. On the bio-AFM side, we have Professor McNally is here. So if you have a chance, she's got a really nice bio-AFM setup, and what we have is another, you know, such system, which we dedicate to biological samples in liquids. It's basically an inverted microscope with an Asylum MFP 3D. We're just acquiring, a really high resolution AFM system from Cypher, which allows us to scan at very high speeds and very high resolution. The nice thing about this is that this allows us to deal with ultra small cantilever probes. And so the technology in AFM is evolving towards, you know, from 200 microns long cantilevers, now you can do 10 micron long oscillators whose frequencies, instead of being 200 kilohertz, are 5 megahertz, for example. So it allows very interesting probing of local properties. And then we have Agilent systems, Nanotech Electronica systems. In the facilities, I actually put in a software that we have developed in the group. It's called the Virtual Environment for Dynamic AFM. This is, at the moment, the most popular simulation tool for atomic force microscopy in the world, I would say. There are more than 1,000 users worldwide. It's used regularly for classes everywhere. But what it really does is, like I mentioned to you, you know, the atomic force microscope is essentially, to understand what you're getting, it's an inverse problem, because you don't directly measure the forces. What you measure is how the cantilever moves. To figure out what the surface chemistry or the surface mechanics is, you got to deconvolute the mechanics of the cantilever itself. And you need good models for it. So what we have developed is a capability that allows you to create some sort of artificial, let's say, landscape with different kinds of material properties. And there are 19, 20 kinds of interaction potentials you can use for electrostatics, for hydration layers, solvation shells. If you're working in liquids, you can include chemical specific forces, all kinds of things. And you can sort of create landscapes with different kinds of tip sample interaction properties. And then you can have your oscillating cantilever simulated and scan it over, and then try to correlate all the phase contrasts, the harmonics, and so on that you see to the interaction forces between the tip and the sample. This is a big tool at our disposal. It's really, I guess, our workhorse for understanding what AFM really does. All right, so basically, today I thought to do an overview of what is happening in the atomic force microscopy field as far as any energy applications are concerned, and just touch upon some energy related directions in our group. And if I have time, and I won't have time, we'll see if we can touch upon nanobiomechanics. All right. So I thought to highlight two interesting features of scanning probe microscopy that could be used to shed some light and characterize nanostructured energetic materials. One of them that's becoming quite popular these days is photoconductive AFM. And the reason I bring this up is actually we can do this in our AFM system. So if anyone in the audience is interested in characterizing organic photovoltaics and nanostructured organic photovoltaics, you know, we have the capability for doing it. We just haven't done it because we don't have a collaborator. That's the only reason. And we don't know anything about OPVs. But the bottom line is, one of the key features, where photoconductive AFM can help out is, you know, you can actually use the inverted microscope to shine light from the bottom, go through the ITO and onto the photoconductive layer. And your AFM tip can be platinum coated, so you can actually apply biases and look at photoactive current with nanoscale resolution over the sample. And the key feature here is that by switching the bias, positive-negative bias, you can get images of the photo-induced current. This would be the topography, for example. This would be photo-induced current. By switching the bias, you can see the bright and the dark spot, which are somehow related to the generation of excitons with very high resolution. So what is happening is these days photoconductive AFM is being used. There's a whole bunch of ways this capability is being used, not only to understand the connection between nanostructure and the generation of excitons, but also to study exciton recombination with not just very high spatial resolution, but if you use a tunable light source, for example, you can get spectral information as well with it. So this is one of those areas we have the capability, but we haven't started collaborating with anyone. So if anyone in the audience works in these kind of problems.
With the photoconductive process.
Right.
The process is very, very fast.
Yeah. Well, what's being done right now? So I don't know the details of, you know, how you can look at all the different timescales involved. But I believe what happens is there are two kinds of studies I've seen. I've seen transient and steady state studies. The transient studies, you know, you have the light on and you turn it off and you look at decays with spatial resolution. And, when I look at the timescales involved, I've seen results where they measure photoactive current for maybe milliseconds. I know the recombination process is much faster and so on. I have to get back and see what the details are, but there are some transient studies that are being performed. Yeah, it's probably going to be a limitation in some sense. So if there are people here working on those kind of problems, please, I'm very interested. Both Ron and I are we're looking for collaborators because we have this capability. The second interesting area where, and I bring it up because you're going to hear this following presentation by Ron on supercapacitors, with Tim. But there's interesting work now coming out of Oak Ridge National Labs on the use of scanning probe microscopy for characterizing nanostructured electrodes in various electrochemistry applications, including, for example, fuel cells and lithium-ion batteries, battery materials. And how this works is interesting. I don't know too much about it, but let me try to explain it from what I understand. So the idea about an AFM is if you take a conductive platinum-coated AFM tip, and let's say you're in a ionic medium, you know, representing some sort of a battery, medium, and then you have your electrode surface, what electrochemical strain microscopy does is you locally apply a bias, right? And that bias basically induces diffusion of ions in or out, depending on the direction of the bias, into the electrode material. That causes an expansion or a contraction of the material. And you can measure that using AFM. So this is an interesting application of, in AFM in old days, they used to have piezo-response force microscopy. Well, you can use it for electrochemical strain applications. And they've been able to, with the help of models, actually understand diffusion coefficients with, you know, sub-10 nanometer resolution of ions in and out of these electrode materials. So a lot of this work is being carried out at Oak Ridge. Nina Balke, she's one of the scientists out there. She came here and gave a talk in materials engineering just last year. So this is another interesting area. We have the capability for this, and looking forward to some interesting collaborations using this method. We'll move on to carbon nanotube composites, which is, as I mentioned to you, is one area of application. We've been using the AFM to characterize carbon nanotube-based composites. But as many of you know, the notion of CNT, CNT-based composites are being used to improve the efficiency of, OPVs, but also they're being used for, electrodes, to improve charge discharging and charging in electrodes. And you're going to see interesting examples of graphitic petals doing a great job of this. So the question is, if you're looking at CNT-based polymer composites, what kind of characterization is relevant and important to these applications? One is the notion of quality of percolation. I bring this up because when people talk of percolation thresholds, they're making bulk measurements, right, of conductivity of these films. But there is an issue of quality in the sense that is the percolation network localized in space just between a certain part of your film, or is it, uniformly distributed? You want it to be uniformly distributed. So if you're doing manufacture of carbon nanotube-based films, it is important to get an idea of spatial distribution and quality of percolation as well. And so what we started doing some time ago, this is again in collaboration with Ron and our colleagues in Universidad Autónoma in Madrid, and this is what Maria Jose is working on, is how can we use the scanning probe microscope, which is essentially a surface instrument, to look underneath the surface to see carbon nanotubes and connectivity of carbon nanotubes beneath the surface. Can we do it? That's the question. And the metrics of interest is to understand and quantify dispersion of CNTs, electrical connectivity between them. And we have a number of samples of interest. We have single-wall carbon nanotubes that are grown by CVD, which are spun coat. You spin coat a polymer, 40 nanometer or 100 nanometer layer of polymer on it. In the second case, we actually mix our multi-walled carbon nanotubes as well as single-walled carbon nanotubes with different polymers and then spin coat them over the surface. So we started working on this some time ago, and Ron actually knew about this result. He had worked on looking at conductivity and carbon nanotubes some time ago, and he suggested an idea whereby what you see is you take an AFM cantilever and you oscillate it, and you oscillate in what's called the attractive regime, which means the only forces felt by the tip are attractive van der Waals or electrostatic forces. You don't actually get into the repulsive regime of interactin. So you're oscillating without touching the substrate. And then you scan, keeping the amplitude constant of oscillation constant. And the amount that you need to move the cantilever up and down to keep the amplitude constant is rendered as a topography of the sample. This is the so-called tapping mode or amplitude modulation mode. This is a topography. The phase lag tells you how the phase of oscillation of the cantilever relative to the drive changes. And in the absence of any bias voltage applied to the system, there's no way you're going to see anywhere carbon nanotubes. But what started happening is, when we started putting a bias in the cantilever relative to the grounded substrate, we started seeing a very nice pattern of carbon nanotubes lying 40 nanometers underneath the surface. These are single-walled carbon nanotubes. And which is very interesting, is you increase the voltage, of course, what ends up happening is if you do very high volts, it sort of bleeds into the topography, because you can imagine the electrostatic fields start affecting the cantilever, and the amplitude starts changing when you're over a carbon nanotube versus when you're on the neat polymer. But the phase is what gives you a really vivid image of these carbon nanotubes that are laying beneath the substrate. The mechanism, of course, was not understood. Why does this happen? This is a zoom-in, for example. And you can actually tell, if you look carefully, that the electrical connectivity of these carbon nanotubes reflects in very bright spots in these intersection points in the phase contrast images. But you have to apply a tip bias voltage. Over the last year, Ron and I have been involved with a couple of students trying to understand why on earth does this happen? Because phase contrast in AFM fundamentally comes from changing dissipation. Something removes mechanical energy from the oscillator. You're in the attractive regime, which means you're not physically contacting the surface. So how can you get mechanical energy dissipation while you're oscillating and not physically connecting? There's no viscoelasticity in the sample. Where does it come from? And so we talked to Ashraf Alam, who's a theorist at Purdue, and he suggested that an interesting phenomenon of capacitive breaking, in that basically you have a percolating network and ultimately it's connected through some contact resistance to ground. What you're doing as you oscillate the cantilever is you're charging the network, and that discharges. And so you're going to get a mechanical hysteretic loop forming in it. So effectively, what we measure in these phase contrast images could be related to mechano-electrical energy conversion and then dissipation into the ground in these samples. So that's turning out pretty much to be the main reason for this. We also do things like bimodal. We use advanced capabilities in AFM. Some of you know AFM, you can sort of drive just the first eigenmode, but you can do pretty cool things like these are continuous media, so you can have multiple eigenmodes and drive all of them simultaneously and see all kinds of interesting behavior. And these multi-frequency methods are pretty much where AFM is moving towards these days. A lot of interesting things are happening. But in this case, for example, we noticed that, if you want to image subsurface carbon nanotubes using this mechanism, so what you see is on the top is the topography like I showed you. This is the phase of the first oscillation mode of the cantilever. This is the phase of the second oscillation mode. You don't see too well on the projection. It turns out much nicer on the computer screen. But effectively, you're able to increase the contrast between carbon nanotubes and polymers by about an order of magnitude when you start using these multimodal techniques in AFM. This is Maria Jose's result. She is now looking at ways to use Kelvin force microscopy so here's what we're trying to do. We have a film. What's the polymer, Maria Jose? It's an amide. It's a polyamide. It's a polyamide film with single-walled carbon nanotubes in it. You got an electrode, you paint a silver electrode here, you paint a silver electrode there. And what she's trying to do right now is to apply a bias voltage between these two electrodes and then actually using different techniques, including Kelvin force microscopy, really visualize the exact percolating path that the current actually takes. And this is a three-dimensional percolating network in this case. But before that, here's an example of just using the same method that I told you, not Kelvin force, this sort of phase-induced bias that I talked about. And you start seeing the topography on the sample. This is the phase contrast. And again, as you increase the voltage, bias voltage on the platinum-coated tip, you don't see this too well here on the screen. It shows much better on the computer. You're able to see this three-dimensional network of carbon nanotubes buried under the surface of the sample, which is a very interesting capability to go underneath the surface. Okay. I'll quickly touch upon some applications to cellulose, which I think are interesting directions for biofuels, for using scanning probe microscopy for biofuels applications. So in this project that we have at the Forest Products Lab, we're really trying to analyze cellulose nanocrystals. So what are cellulose nanocrystals? You take trees, you look at plant cells. Plant cell walls contain, you know, lignin, pectin, cellulose. You go through a process by which you can isolate the cellulosic parts of the cell wall, which consist of amorphous as well as crystalline regions. And you typically go through acid hydrolysis to isolate the crystalline parts, which is cellulose nanocrystals, which are basically nicely organized chains of cellulose put together. What's interesting about them is why the Forest Products Labs is interested in it is to get high value-added products out of, you know, forest products, basically. Their modulus, Young's modulus, is comparable to Kevlar, so people are very interested in it. So what we've been doing with cellulose nanocrystals is a whole bunch of different experiments. We do things like very high-resolution images. We do force distance curves, on top of the cellulose crystals. Really, really focus on quantifying uncertainty in measurements that come up with transverse moduli, measurements that you can't normally make otherwise with very high resolution. We can do things like shear them and look at, you know, shearing strength of these things. We can set them across trenches and do bending measurements. So we started thinking recently, well, we've been focusing on nanocrystals, but, you know, you have to think of nanocrystals as a byproduct of another process. And if you think of the standard biofuels, cellulosic biofuels kind of approach, you're going to take all the cellulosic biomass and you're going to run through enzymes, and, you know, enzymes are going to do their job. And I'm not a chemist, so I apologize to the chemists in the audience, but I think of enzymes as little Pac-Man-like things just going around, breaking down connections. And there's been an interest in Japan mostly on using very high-resolution AFM in liquid environments with enzymes to actually observe enzyme activities on single cellulosic particles. You can imagine that the crystalline part of cellulose are going to be the hardest to break down. And so atomic force microscopy can provide really a lot of interest and a lot of insight into how enzymes actually pull apart cellulosic chains in the most difficult time-consuming process of biofuel production, which is the crystalline part of cellulose. How do you break that down? And the mechanisms of enzyme activity are actually not very well understood, especially when you look at it on the nanoscale. And so this is an interesting area of research. We're seeing Japan really taking the lead in. And so at Berk, we've started working with Nathan Mosier's group in agriculture and biological engineering. So now we have cellulosic nanocrystals. This is from tunicates. Tunicates are the only source of natural cellulose in the animal kingdom. These are sea squirts. These are found in the ocean. They produce cellulose, nanocellulose. So these are in liquids now. We're able to image the CNCs in liquids. And this is wood-based nanofibrillated cellulose in liquids. And so we're now working and putting cellulase in different enzymes and actually observing activity. Okay, I'll just try to conclude with, the group has a lot of, as I mentioned, resources for atomic force microscopy. I talked about the virtual environment for dynamic AFM, which is currently funded by Dow and NSF, different NSF grants. It's heavily used around the world. Actually, a lot of users in India as well. This is actually old numbers. These are from about a year ago. And this is freeware, shareware. Actually, people can use it. It's Fortran-based code and really develop it any which way they want to. Another thing which I'll put a plug for, which is a course that Ron and I teach on NanoHub on the fundamentals of atomic force microscopy. And it's going to be offered. You're going to hear Diana Hancock speak about this afternoon on NanoHub University in the fall. But this has, again, been, we think, pretty successful. As a community, we think that atomic force microscopy is not a trivial instrument to use. And there are a lot of users who don't have the background to understand what atomic force microscopy does. And we really think that using cyber infrastructure, not only for providing simulation tools, but also for education, is really a key way by which we can improve the quality of AFM-based characterization around the world. So with that, I'll end and open the floor to any questions. Thank you.